Lori Houston's News for the Heart is dedicated to helping you give a voice to your own soul. Our hearts have the power to free us from pain and the struggles that keep us from awakening to our true essence. Join Lori now as we delve into our heart and soul to find the path that will open us to the possibilities and lead us to the life we love to live.
And good afternoon. This is News for the Heart. Well, I am back from my big trip. I have Tom with me today, and so we are going to talk about the immersive. For those of you that have not yet done an immersive with Tom Campbell, I highly, highly recommend it for so many reasons, and we'll get into that. I had an amazing trip. I knew it was going to be something that would sort of take me out of my comfort zone and push me to grow a little bit up. As I've been hibernating for the last few years and coming out, touching my toes, and then coming back in, I really needed kind of a push. So Keith and Donna offered me that push. And so I am back from an amazing trip. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that because, you know, to be honest, Tom, we've now done interviews for 10 years. And I always love doing interviews with you, as everyone knows, because I always start off almost every interview saying that, because we come from the same place. You come from a physics background that is incredible, have a wealth of knowledge, but when we bring it all back together, it's all about working through our fears and growing up towards love. And that has always been something that I've worked my life with. And I think it's, you know, that's why it works so well with us. So I had no idea what to expect. I did know that you were, you know, an integral part of the Monroe Institute. So I did know that you did, you know, out-of-body experiences. And I knew you worked with the binaural beats. Actually, I don't think I actually ever have worked with them. I've heard of them. I have them. I just never quite got to trying them out. And so I really didn't know what to expect. I wasn't sure. You know, I knew that we would be doing meditation. I knew that that's, you know, an integral part of what you do. I just didn't know. I really honestly didn't know what to expect. Now, if you are going to do an immersive with Tom, and I know that you haven't been doing them for that long, if you're going to do an immersive with Tom, you have to go to one of these incredible events that is, I mean, we were at a castle, Northern England, surrounded by beauty, so quiet, so beautiful. The food was amazing. A group of almost 100 people, like-hearted, some just like-minded, but very, very much, you know, something that, no matter what, pushes you to grow. No matter what, when you actually put yourself in an environment where there's a lot of people, where we're sharing experiences, it pushes you. The fact that we got to do the meditation in our room, I was so pleased. Because quite often, you know, you go to these things, you're like on a yoga mat, you're uncomfortable for the entire time. Yeah. So I was very pleased that we got to do it in a room. So even better, you know, we're in this beautiful environment. So it becomes more, it's like a whole experience. It's not just about your work as much as the work is amazing. And, you know, Tom, so many people love you. I mean, I heard Santa Claus, I heard God. I mean, people really, really love you. And there's a reason, because you are so genuine. You know, you come off as just, you know, in your interviews and stuff, sometimes you're a little stiff. Sometimes you're, you know, you always have a wealth of knowledge. But being in your presence for that length of time, I mean, you could really tell that you walk your talk. The love that you emanated was just, it was beautiful. So you want to, if you've ever wondered kind of what Tom does, I even had an interview with Jean Adrian the other day, and she was like, okay, so you went on a 5-day in a castle with Tom, who is a physicist. What could you have possibly gotten out of that? And it's like, oh, you No idea. It was amazing. So we did all sorts of different exercises. I mean, we, you know, went from communication to, you know, sharing energy to doing healing work, to doing remote viewing, to doing past life and future probabilities. I mean, it's the whole thing. So if you're looking to really make some changes, this is definitely the way to go. I know since I've come back, I've done a little bit of experimenting with, you know, sending energy and sharing energy and to very positive effects. So, I mean, it really is interesting. And I also like that, you know, you weren't the person that said, you know, go to your room, chant Om for, you know, the hour and see what happens. It was very, very specific. We, you know, you gave us a few hours before to prep and to know what we were going to be doing. Sometimes it was the evening before. We had an agenda, sort of. You didn't have to do everything at once. You didn't, like, it wasn't, it was just, I really liked the way it was all paced out. I loved the environment. I loved the people. It just, it brought a real warmth and genuinity to, and authenticity to what you do, the work that you do. And it really looked well on you because everybody really adores you. Like everybody. I mean, I get the advantage of talking to you all the time. I tried not to put too much in there except for, you know, some funny comments every once in a while. But I really, you know, I wanted to give everybody else an opportunity. And I have gotten, you know, some feedback from people. We will be doing a little bit of talking about virtual realities probably in our next show. I did want to talk a little bit. I did get a message regarding the still point or that place that we go to. You know, a lot of people get confused about that. They think it's, you know, some, I think they think it's bigger than it is. I think they get scared and think, oh, I'm not doing it properly. And that's just not the case. I mean, it's, We've all experienced that place where we just feel that connection to everything. And when you're in a large environment like that, it's almost impossible not to feel that connection. So let's talk a little bit about that. We'll talk a little bit about some of the things that we did. But yeah, I mean, again, I can't say enough about you, Tom. I really love that we get to talk all the time. I love the work that you do and the fact that we bring it all back to love and getting rid of our fears. I mean, that really is the only thing we're here to do.
Well, thank you, Lori. That was a wonderful introduction to the subject. Were you in the first or the second
first
group? You were in the first group?
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a good time. It was a very nice place, a good facility. You're right. The food was wonderful. The people were wonderful. And it just all worked together very nicely. But it usually does. That's my, I don't know, fifth or sixth or seventh time that I've done these. And we've got a whole lot of them for 2019, but I think they're all probably booked already by now through all of the rest of this year.
I'm really gearing towards that Tuscany one.
That's going to be fun.
I think so.
We do them all over, but we do four or five of them here in the U.S.
And, that's right.
Around the Gatlinburg area. We have a big cabin. If you want to call it a cabin, you know, it sleeps like, you know, 40 people.
Nice.
And it's a cabin, but it's just this big cabin out in the woods. And it's very, very quiet, peaceful, and beautiful surroundings, same sort of thing. And again,
it's an experience. I mean, that's what it is. It's the whole experience.
Yeah. So it's fun, but we're booked up for 2019.
Wow.
Although, you know, people always are canceling because when you book something up almost a year ahead, there's going to be some people that when they get there, you know, it's just, they can't do it because of whatever that comes up.
Yeah.
So there's always going to be openings now and again. So I'd put your name on a list and Keith is booking for 2020 already.
I know. Especially the Tuscany.
Yes. Tuscany is going to be a lot of fun. We're going to take over a whole village.
Yeah.
So there's going to be a little village there, you know, a little group of houses and so on. And then it'll work kind of the same way, except we'll be in this very nice little village out in the country in Italy.
You just need to give us more than 5 minutes to get there and back, probably.
We'll have to improve that.
Yeah. So, still point.
Well, you want to talk about point consciousness.
Yes.
That's what I call point consciousness.
Right.
And you're absolutely right. People make a bigger deal out of it than really it is. People make a bigger deal out of the, you know, the out of body than
yes.
it really is. All of these things seem like they're so far out there, so amazing that you could never possibly reach them. And you try, but you're trying with your intellect and you don't seem to be able to get there, which just makes you believe that they really are that far away and yes. impossible to get through. But they're not really. It's really much easier than it seems. Now, point consciousness is just where you end up when you let go of physical reality sense data. Now, it doesn't mean that you couldn't hear your phone ringing or the doorbell or the traffic outside. It just means you don't process it. You don't pay any attention to it. You're not thinking about it. You're not wondering who is that on the phone or, you know, who might that be driving by your house or whose children are, you know, screaming outside. You know, you just don't process it. You just let it all go. Unless, of course, it's your children screaming outside. Then you need to get up.
Yeah.
But if it's just stuff, you know, in your environment, then you can tell, if you think about it, that you're lying on a bed or sitting on a chair or standing up, whatever it is you're doing. But you let your mind wander away from that to where you're not thinking about any of that. So pretty soon you find yourself just a point of consciousness floating in a black void. You're not really processing any sense data. You're not aware of things. Now, if you want to be aware, if you want to say, oh, am I still lying on my bed? Well, you can feel that you are. Yeah, there I am. I feel the bed. I'm lying on it. But then you let that go and it's gone again. So it's just letting go of that outside world of the sense data. And to let you know how simple it is, everybody who gets very engrossed in a good book gets into something very close to point consciousness. They're no longer processing the fact that they're sitting in a chair or, you know, that people are walking around, you know, in the library behind them or any of the rest of it. Their environment disappears and they exist only in the story that's going on in the book.
Right.
They're kind of an onlooker in that story in the book, and all the rest of it's gone. Well, that's point consciousness, except for the fact that you're aware of the book. So if you just closed the book and you didn't have a story going on, then that would be point consciousness. So it's a simple state that is easy to get into unless you're really, really trying to get into it.
Yes.
Then it's real hard because you're trying too hard, and that puts you in an intellectual space of trying, and that intellectual space then keeps you from actually getting there because you're constantly thinking about, am I there yet? Is this right? Oh, no, I'm not doing it right. I'm having trouble. And when you get into all of that going on in your head, then, of course, that prevents you from getting there. So you just have to let everything go. Now, people learn to do that in a meditation. That's sort of what meditation is about. It's about letting go of thoughts to where you can sit still for a while and not think anything. Not only not think about anything, but just not think anything. Just let your mind be blank. Find that still space. And when you do, and you're no longer processing information, well, that's point consciousness. You're there. So it's just where you are in a decent meditation state. Many people, when they try to meditate, they can't not think. That mind is constantly jabbering about all sorts of things, usually trivial things, you know, just day-to-day stuff that's on your mind, that's in there, and you have to practice it, letting that go. Well, that's okay. It may take you a few months, but you may start and find out that you can only go about 10 seconds without a thought coming through your mind. Well, work with that, and pretty soon it's 20 seconds, and then 30 seconds, and then a whole minute, and it just gets to the point where you can let them go and they don't come back anymore. It may take a few months, but this point consciousness is not really a difficult state to achieve.
Right.
And it's the doorway for everything else. Letting go of the sense data to where you're just a point of consciousness, sort of what I call the Descartes moment, you know, I think, therefore I am, you know, well, I'm aware, and that's all I'm aware of is that I'm aware.
Right.
when you're in that spot, then everything else becomes easier, because without thinking, you're now in the being level. You're just being aware. You're not in your intellect. And if you can stay there in that being level and not pop back into the intellect, then you're in a prime place for doing all of the, you know, the fun things that we call paranormal. That's the remote viewing, the healing, the communicating with telepathy, all of these things and more you can do. You can get into databases, you can see auras, it just goes on and on, all the things you can do with a consciousness. And those aren't really skills you have to learn so much as they are just things that are available to you when you are in a state of point consciousness. You can just do them. The hard part for most people is doing them from that being level and not jumping out of the being level into their intellect. But again, that's just a matter of practice. It's something that takes a little effort, and it takes a little effort just to understand what the difference is between the intellectual level and the being level. You know, that takes in itself just a little practice. Being in that zone is what I mean by the being level, where you're not really using your intellect to plot your course and judge what you're doing and assess whether you're doing it right. You let all that go and you just do it.
Right.
And that is, you know, it doesn't sound hard, and it really isn't that hard. And once you get used to all that, it's really very simple. It's very easy, and it doesn't take much time, and you can do it very quickly. So the reason I have these courses is that in my book, I tell people, don't believe what I tell you. Probably the only guy that at the end of a lecture gets up and says, remember all this stuff I told you for the last 2 days? Don't believe any of it. And that's because believing it isn't going to be helpful to you. And just keeping it all in your intellect isn't going to be that helpful to you either. You can memorize, you know, everything I say, and it's just not going to help you much if you can't apply it, if you can't live it. So you have to be it, not think about it. So I tell people, don't believe it. Don't disbelieve it. Just be open-minded and be skeptical about it. And when I tell people that, if it's not your experience, it can't be your truth. Right. Just stay open-minded. Well, I didn't like doing these things that had to do with the paranormal. I avoided them as much as I could until somebody pointed out to me. They said, Uncle Tom, if you tell us we need to have our own experience, otherwise it's not our truth, you need to help us understand how to get that experience. Well, they caught me there, because that was true. You know, I do tell them it has to be your own experience. You can't just believe it because I tell you, you read it in a book. So then I felt like I needed to offer these courses to help people have the experience so they could experience the larger consciousness system, what it means to get there, how do you get around in it, and then all the things you can do with a consciousness, all the things that are natural to consciousness, like communicating telepathically. It's just a natural thing that consciousness can do. You just have to put yourself in the right frame of mind, get rid of all that noise, and there you go. It works. It's easy. Matter of fact, healing somebody with your mind is about the easiest paranormal thing you can do. It's just a real simple thing. And shoot, I don't know, 3-4 months worth of practice, and you probably get reasonably good at it. Oh, you won't be, you know, you won't be as good as the best, obviously, in 3 months practice, but you can get to where you really see that you're having an effect. It becomes obvious that you're having an effect. It's not a hard thing to do, and everybody can do it. You just have to learn to let go of that consciousness, get in that being level zone, and keep your intellect out of the game. As soon as that gets in the game, then the game's over. It doesn't work anymore. Of course, those of us in Western culture, we live our life through our intellect. Our intellect does everything. Our whole life is kind of scheduled and designed and implemented from our intellect. We think everything through before we do it. And then we make a plan, and then we implement that plan. And our intellect is busy all the time judging and assessing. Are we doing this right? Are we getting our results? And if not, how do we change what we're doing to get the results that we want? So our intellect just is running our life. And there's nothing bad about an intellect. We need intellect. But we have both an intellectual side and an intuitive side. And those two need to be balanced. Most of us in Western culture are terribly unbalanced. We have this huge intellectual side and a tiny little, sometimes absent altogether, intuitive side that we don't trust. And that's way out of balance. Now, some people who are extremely right brain people, who don't do logical process, just see big pictures and holistic with things, they very much are into the intuitive side. But if they don't, you know, they can be out of balance too. It can be all intuitive side. And they don't really connect with our reality and our world. And we call them airheads and things like that, right? We make fun of them because they never seem to know exactly where they are, what they're doing, or why they're doing it. But yet they can come up with all these amazing ideas and concepts and information. And it just seems strange to us that they can do that. But that's the other extreme.
Right.
You really need to have a real good balance between your intellect and your intuition, to where both of them do what they do best. Right. And each one, you know, works with the other one, not dominates the other one. Right now, our intellect tends to want to dominate. That's just its nature. I'm in charge. You know, sit down and be quiet, and I'll tell you what to do. And that is where most Westerners are anyway. And most Easterners are really there too, because Western culture is now world culture. You know, everybody's in an industrial culture that's consumer based and it's all economic based. So that tends to drive people into a intellectual process, because that's a world in which intellectual processing, you know, gets you through it. So we do that. So then we neglect this whole other part of our life that is our intuitive part. And it just kind of lies fallow. And if you don't use it, you know, you lose it. And pretty soon people don't even know they have that part of themselves. And they think all these ideas of paranormal stuff are kind of ridiculous because they don't make any sense intellectually. But all of that is just normal to consciousness. It's not really paranormal. It's not really weird. It's just normal. It's as normal as the intellectual space. It's just another part of us. And if we don't exercise it and we don't use it, then it's not very useful to us. We can't rely on it. It's not something that you can, you know, can feel like the information you might get intuitively is really valuable, that you want to act on it because you don't really trust it. It's just comes from someplace I don't know where, and it's not my intellect. Therefore, I'm not in control. And if I'm not in control, I don't feel good about it. See, our intellect allows us to pretend that we're in control, even when we're not. But that's what our intellect does. It makes us think we're somehow, at least partially, in control all the time. And, of course, we're not nearly as much in control as we want to be or as we think we are.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the bottom, in a nutshell sort of thing of what was going on, why I do it, and what it's all about, is to help people find that intuitive side and exercise it a little bit, to where they understand it and can go home after this course. And if they have the intent and the gumption to stick with it, they can develop all that intuition, to a pretty fine degree, just with the information that they learn in this course. So that's what it's about. Now, how many people actually do it, actually go home and practice it and live it? Well, some do. You know, I get emails all the time from people who have changed their lives. But I imagine the majority probably doesn't. Mm-hmm. They probably get spun up about it. And, you know, a couple of weeks go by and then they're less spun up. And, you know, a month goes by and they're right back in the same groove that they were in before. Life overcomes them, you know, and all of its little, you know, tedious things that we're required to pay attention to. And they kind of forget it and it kind of slides away. But at least if they got re-energized with it, they'd know what to do and how to do it, and they'd have the tools for it.
Right.
So I don't know how many people it really changes dramatically, but at least it offers an opportunity for people to have another whole world of choice and information and connection and caring and love, because you can't really do these things if you don't care.
No.
If you're just going through the motions to do them because you want to do them, that won't take you very far. You have to really care about healing somebody. You have to really care about, you know, if you're communicating telepathically, you have to, it has to be a caring communication, one that is about them, not about you. So that's another thing, I guess, that's difficult for people. For most people, life isn't like that, really. It's mostly about them, not about other people. So that makes it a little more difficult, too. But I've had people come to 2 or 3. Some of them even come to 4 of these things. So they come and they come again and they come again. And each time they make a little progress and they go a little further. But one should be enough if you really practice afterwards. But most people don't. And most people have to struggle with that ego a while before they can figure out what the being level is and that sort of thing. So,
but it's also the experience part of it. So it's, you know, and because it's such an incredible experience, I want to go again. I do this stuff all the time. I still want to go. So it's not that. It's not just that, Tom.
That's true. I think as much as anything that I say there, it's the interaction between all the people that are there.
Exactly.
That's a very, very helpful thing. And it's not just networking. It's just being around a bunch of people who really care, who are trying to grow, who are trying to, you know, find a better way. You know, they're trying to be better, live a better life, make better choices. And they're involved in that. And they care about each other. So that's a really nice place. I mean, how often are you in a group of 100 people who all care about each other?
Exactly.
You know? I mean, you're lucky, very lucky, if you're even in a family where everybody cares about each other. You know, that would be a functional family rather than a dysfunctional family. And, you know, most people grow up in dysfunctional families where there's some caring, but there's also a lot of ego and arrogance and other things going on as well. So being in a group of people who relate in a very caring way is a pretty special experience.
It really is.
All by itself.
It really, really is. I think the binaural beats was an interesting thing. Again, something I hadn't really worked with at all. I think it assisted you to get out of your head. I think that's part of the way it was focused so that, you know, you get different brainwaves working, and I think that was an effective tool. Again, these are just tools, so they're not necessary, but I think a lot of people found them very interesting, and because you did such a wide range of them, you could really kind of fall into which one sort of fit you best, and then you could take that and use it for, you know, whatever work you're wanting to do. But I liked, I mean, I like giving people guided meditations because I think sometimes people need to have some sort of focus. And I think by you offering, you know, certain exercises, that allowed people to focus so that they're not so much in their head. And I think the bit about, you know, us being in our head, I mean, I mean, we really value intellect, and you know, coming from a completely different field, more the social work and definitely more intuitive and definitely more right brain, where you, you know, science, science, science. And I mean, they're very opposite ends, but you've always had a healthy balance. I mean, from a very, very young age, you've had a healthy balance of taking both, because I think for you, you saw that bridge, you know, very easily, where most of us, you do fall in one category or the other, and then try and create that bridge where you kind of, I think you have had the vision of the bridge always being there, that it's just, it's the only way that we can travel this world properly and in balance is actually knowing that both sides are equally important. And that, you know, that that kind of woo-woo energy where they're not grounded and they're stuck up. I mean, that happens to the best of us, where we can, you know, get very ungrounded if we're much more right-wing or right-brained and very, you know, focused on the bigger picture. It sometimes is hard to get grounded, but you're right. I mean, this, most of the first world countries very much value intellect. So it's hard when, you know, even psychology, and I mean, it's very analytical. I mean, everything about it is trying to help people, but from, you know, that mental place instead of a place that is much more organic and balanced. I mean, it really, it's we're in a very interesting time because I think everything is starting to change, but we needed more people like you to sort of help see that balance, because you attract a lot of the people that are very science and left brain people, because that's, I mean, that's who you are. Like, that's kind of your background. So that, for those people, it's safer to go to you. And I think that's a big piece of this, because you know, there are a lot of woo-woo people out there, and some people might find it really interesting, but if they don't have a way to connect with that person and to feel safe with that person, then they're not going to experience it the way it's meant to be experienced. So I think that's the brilliance of, you know, your contract here with the planet and the people that you connect with. I think that's, you know, probably one of the best things about the whole experience, was that it wasn't just the spiritual people, it wasn't just the science people, but it was a way that we all sort of came together and found that balance.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that I tried to do with you know, with My Big Toe,
yeah,
the name of the books. You know, My Big Toe kind of is the I guess the name of the whole process that we do, is that there are literally, you know, thousands of books and speakers and programs for people who are intuitive, for people, yeah, who, you know, you call them woo-woo, you know, the woo-woo people. I wouldn't call them woo-woo people.
No, not all of us.
But I know just what you mean, you know. People who live in that space where they do exercise the intuitive a whole lot. And there's lots of things for them to read.
Yeah.
But most all of it is interpretive.
Yes.
I call that poetry. I just put that under a big, you know, heading, quote, you know, that's poetry. You get the words, but then you have to interpret what that means for you. You know, so you can read the Bhagavad Gita, and there's some godlike guy out on a chariot someplace having a war, and you think, well, what does that have to do with anything? You have to interpret, you know, what that means and what they're actually trying to tell you. And that interpretation is completely personal. It's subjective. So here is a big part of our population, and almost 100% of the movers and shakers, you know, all the doctors, the lawyers, you know, the CEOs, the, you know, on and all the people who are, you know, all the engineers and the scientists, all the people who basically think for a living and, you know, make judgments for a living, work out of their left, you know, their left hemisphere, very analytical, very logical process. And they can't take any of those paths. Those paths just don't compute for them. They'll pick up the Bhagavad Gita, they read the first five pages, close the book and say, this is nonsense. It doesn't mean anything, because they don't do poetry. They want logical process. They want something that makes sense, not some story. And you're supposed to figure out, you know, what the meaning is and apply it to your life. And they said, oh, you know, anybody can make up a story and then apply it to your life, but that doesn't mean anything. So they reject all of that sort of stuff. So for almost all the movers and shakers, and almost, you know, all of the people who are, you know, making our laws and basically mm-hmm. creating our culture, you know, there's no way for them to really get from where they are in intellectual space to a bigger picture. There's just no, you know, so I kind of made MBT, My Big Toe of Books, to be an on-ramp for those people. That's why in my workshops and things that I do, I have a real good smattering of both. There's a lot of intuitives come mm-hmm. because in their intuitive world, without that intellect plugged in, they kind of do stuff, but they don't really know how it works. They know it works, and they've kind of figured out some methods, but they don't know whether those are the best methods or not. And they have a real hard time explaining it to anybody else, so that people don't call them airheads, you know, that they actually do have some process and procedure that actually is doing something, you know. So they come because they want to learn and get more of the structure and more of the understanding and optimize their processes and things like that. And then on the other hand, the other half of the room is full of scientists and engineers and you know, people like that who are very left brain, and they come because they see a bigger picture and they have some intuition that there is a bigger picture out there someplace, maybe. And if there is, you know, they'd like to find it, or at least find out that it doesn't exist, or they're interested in it. So they come because this is a logical process and they can read the logic all the way through. And sure enough, that logic takes them into mysticism. That logic takes them into intuition, takes them into things other than just the physical. And they see the logic for that. It's not that that's illogical. But you're right. Our science has been so successful in making gadgets and explaining things that we have kind of given up everything else in favor of science. So if you now look at psychology just tries as hard as it can try to be a science. Mm-hmm. It wants to be scientific. It needs a hypothesis. It needs, you know, the data. It needs the mathematics. It has to be scientific or it's just garbage. And sociology and all the other soft sciences that have to do with people, where there's lots of uncertainty, they struggle to seem and to be as scientific as possible. Okay, well, that's good. Science is good. Logic is good. But it's not all there is. There's another whole dimension to people that doesn't lend itself to mathematics or, you know, structure. Right. And that's important as well. So yes, you'll find that psychology and sociology and those things just kind of skip all that intuitive side, all that subjective side, and they do some subjective things. They do, you know, statistics on, you know, how many people feel this way and how many people feel that way, and, you know, they do some things like that. But basically, they don't like doing that very much. They want control groups and they want everything to be repeatable. But of course, they find out it's never repeatable. It's never really repeatable. The hard sciences don't even like to call the soft sciences sciences. They say hard science is science, physics is science, chemistry is science, biology is science, and the rest of the stuff, you know, the sociology, psychology and stuff, that's not really science. That's something else. And since science has such a, you know, has five gold stars next to its name, everybody else wants to look like their science. So this other part of our life, our intuitive part, our subjective part, just gets neglected terribly in our culture. Even philosophy is like that. You know, philosophy used to be mostly metaphysics. That's ontology, the idea around being, epistemology, knowledge, cosmology, you know, big picture. How does it all work and why does it work that way? All of these things used to be like the fundamental space of psychology. I mean, philosophy. But now philosophy tries to be scientific too. You know, if the philosophy isn't rational and logical, then it's not good philosophy. Well, philosophy ought to be just about bigger pictures, bigger ideas, concepts. What do things mean? That's kind of philosophy. But they don't speak that way anymore. Even the philosophers tend to narrow themselves down into little bits and pieces that they can measure. Because if you can't measure it, it isn't any good. Well, there's a lot of things you can't measure that are very important. You know, how do you measure love? How do you measure caring? You know, how do you measure happiness? None of those things are measurable, but are they important? Yes, they are the most important things in our life. It's that subjective stuff that is the important stuff in our life. The objective stuff in our life is all the props, you know, the stuff. All right, all the stuff is objective. And that's where physics and chemistry and biology do really good stuff. You know, they work with the stuff. They figure out how does the stuff work. And they're good at that. And that's objective science. And I'm all for that. I'm a physicist. You know, I like that too. But that's only a small piece of a much bigger puzzle. That's not even half, you know, that's like 10 or 20% of our life is really wrapped around the stuff. Most of our life is wrapped around things that are subjective, meaning, significance, all that's subjective.
Right.
So yeah, if you only look to hard science, then you throw meaning and significance out the window. Oh, there is no meaning or significance. Well, then you end up thinking that the world is materialistic and you think that everything's deterministic and, you know, there is no consciousness. That's just an illusion. Time is an illusion, you know, and you go through these things and you're left with this very sterile bucket of stuff. And that's all that's important in your world. Hmm. Well, that's just sad.
Sad.
That's not what life's about. That's not what the world's about. It's about relationship. It's about caring. It's about interaction. That's what life's about. And all of that is subjective. And none of that has anything to do with science, even though sociologists will measure some things. But it's not really about relationship, connections between people, and that dynamic within that relationship, the caring, the love, the sharing. That's what's important in life, and all of it's subjective, and it's all outside of science. So the most important parts of our life, nobody's really trying to understand them.
Yeah,
they're just
so
they're just there muddling along like they've always muddled along, you know, and that's not helpful. So what My Big Toad does is it has a bigger science. It has a science that covers everything. So it looks at subjective science as well as objective science. And you find out that the objective science is just a small subset of a bigger science. It's that part of our experience that has very small uncertainty associated with it. You know, how heavy is this rock? Well, there's a very small amount of uncertainty there. You can measure it to 5, 10, 20 decimal places. There's a little uncertainty somewhere. You can't measure it to infinite decimal places. There's some, but there's not much uncertainty there. Well, that's the stuff. Stuff is pretty certain. We can measure it very exactly, and that's what objective science is about. It's about the objects. So, but there is a subjective science as well, something that lets us understand who we are, why we are. How do you tell right from wrong? You know, how do you tell good choices from bad choices? How do you create good relationships? That also is science. It's not just, well, you do the best you can, you know, and stuff happens, and that's all I can say about it. It's just nothing I can tell you. There's no science there. It's just your own experience. That's not true. There's a lot of science and understanding of the subjective world that puts it all in a nice structure, which is what physics does for the physical world. It puts it in a nice structure where you understand why things act the way they act. Well, you can do the same thing in the subjective world, where you can understand why things are the way they are, why people are the way they are, why relationships are the way they are. You can see the whole structure of how it all fits in. And once you understand that, then it makes it much easier for you to improve it so that you have better relationships, better connections to people. As long as it's just a big muddle that is however it is, you're kind of just lost wandering around in that muddle, and maybe you'll figure something out, maybe you won't. But if you really see how it works, then you have an opportunity to do something about it, to make some progress. So that's kind of the point of it. I made My Big Toad to be an on-ramp for the techies,
yep,
for the left brain logical process guys. But at the same time, it's just as valuable for the right brainers who are more intuitive, because it gives them a structure to understand what they're doing and how and why they're doing it. Why does it work? You know, how does that healing work? And the process people go through, like the Reiki process, and you have these symbols and you have structures and you have all this stuff, you know, well, what is all that stuff? Is that some sort of magic, you know, that allows things to happen? What is all that? Well, once you understand it, you know exactly what it is. They're tools. They're tools we make up to focus our intent. That's all. And you can make up all sorts of tools. There's really no magic about it. It's all very understandable. So it's a theory of everything. And when it's a theory of everything, that includes the subjective as well as the objective. It's everything, not just the objective world. And so far, it seems to have been working out. You know, the theory of everything has to bring order and understanding to whatever your experience is. You have experience. And whether that's been right brain, left brain, however it's been, you have experience. You have experience in relationships. You have experience interactions with other people. You have experience at work. You have experience in school. And you have intellectual experience. You have subjective personal experience. And this model has to explain your experience and put it inside of an overall structure that makes sense. And so far, it does that pretty well. I've been looking for things where it doesn't do it. I'm constantly looking for those things that it, you know, that fall outside of it, and I haven't really found anything yet. I found a few that I hadn't thought of, and I didn't know whether they'd fit or not, but after I think a while, I can find, oh yeah, here's where they fit in that model. You know, it works just like that. So that's basically what it's all about. And, you know, we had a good time there for that week. And the next week, we had a few more people, probably another 10 or 15 people more than we had the first time. Yeah. But it was just as good. It was different. You know, it's a whole different group. The group you were in was more lively, more interactive. The other group was a little more serious and a little more, you know, focused about it. They weren't nearly as talkative. Hmm. But in their own space, they got every bit as much out of it as the first group.
Right.
You know, it kind of works. The groups are all unique. Yeah. They're all special. There's no group like the group you were in. That's a unique animal all by itself, and it creates its own energy.
Right.
And that energy field created by that group is something that just helps pull everybody along.
Right. Yeah. And everybody's different. I mean, that's the whole beauty of it, which I think, you know, I think that's the exciting part of what you do. But I mean, even in, you know, the right brain of us, you know, some people are more tactile, some people are more visual or auditory, or, you know, it's everybody does their own thing the way they need to do it. And everybody is so incredibly unique. But the basic understanding and how it all puts together, I mean, that's what your work does, is help us have that. But, you know, like I think of, you know, Marla, which we'd done some interviews and I hadn't met her in person until the immersive, and you know, and for her, like, you know, she likes to do more of the, you know, she's very detail oriented. So remote viewing is really important to her. For me, remote viewing, that's, I mean, I got a few, but I think I picked the most difficult ones anywhere. I'm like, how did somebody get this? And I got Mount Rushmore. Me, I'm Canadian. Okay. That's not even where my head goes. But it's like, you know, the healing aspect, very good at the healing. Probably. Yeah. I really only got one that I only got about half right. So I did really well in the healing stuff. I did really well with the communication, because that's kind of what I do. I did really well with the sending of energy, and since then it's gotten a lot better. But I mean, we pick up the things that are important to us, and we develop them from there. It's we're all responsible for our own journey and our own growth. You just happen to see. That's why I liked your way of doing it much more than some of the other retreat type places that I've gone to, where it's very, it's their way or no way sort of thing. So with you, I mean, it was so open that it allowed us to be us and still, you know, grow. And yeah, I mean, I honestly believe that if you're in a group that size and if you're truly participating, then everybody will grow, whether, you know, regardless.
Yeah, well, that's the point. It's not that this theory comes out and says, oh, well, this way's right and these ways are wrong. And it's not that it tells you that. It lets you look at any way and every way and see how it works and why it works and what it's, you know, how efficient is it and so on. You can just see it for what it is. It doesn't have any judgment about any of it. It just shows what is its process. You know, there's millions of processes to get from A to B.
Yeah.
And you need to pick one that suits you. You need to have tools that are your kind of metaphors, the metaphors that mean a lot to you. That's important. And you go to a training course where they tell you, you know, this is the right way here. Yes. We're going to teach you how to do it right. Then you are being asked to use their metaphors. Well, if you and them kind of think alike and have the same sorts of experiences, then their metaphors will work real well for you. But if you really think differently and come from different sorts of experiences, their metaphors aren't going to be much good for you at all. It just won't work. And you'll find some of those things work well and other ones don't work well. That's because, you know, some of them happen to fit your metaphors and some of them don't. Well, if that's the case, why not make up your own metaphors that suit you really, really well? Something that is connected to the way you see the world. And that's how all these different modes and methods of doing things, you know, that's why there's 1,000 different training courses out there, is because out of millions of people, you know, thousands of them have come up with their own metaphors that work really well for them. And they think, well, if it worked well for me, it should work great for everybody. Well, that's not the case. Mm-hmm. It works well for you. It works well for you. And it'll probably work well for some others, too, mm-hmm. that see the world the same way you do. But it's better for everybody to do their own thing in their own way, on their own path, in their own time, because that's the only way you can grow up. So nobody can say, you know, here's the prescription for growing up. Just do what I tell you and you'll grow up and become love. That doesn't work. You got to get there on your own. So it's a matter of being inclusive of everybody, which is kind of the nice thing about this theory. I've had any number of people say, Tom, have you been studying Tibetan Buddhism? And I say, well, not really. And they say, well, I've been studying it for the last 15 years and you sound exactly like you're talking about Tibetan Buddhism. But I hear the same thing from somebody talking about the Kabbalah. Tom, you must have studied the Kabbalah because, you know, or and on and on and on, you know, from shaman to, you know, all sorts of people and all kinds of modes and ideas. And many people think that, you know, I'm part of all these different schools. That's where I'm at, because they're very similar, because they can see the logic now. Finally, they see the logic in what it is that they're doing. Right. And now all that poetry starts to make sense. Oh, yeah, that's what that poetry means. That's why they said that. And it all starts to go from poetry to logical process. They can understand the poetry. They can interpret the poetry appropriately now, once they understand how it works. But it's inclusive. All those things fit under it just fine. You know, it doesn't matter if you're a Christian or a Muslim or Zen or Buddha or Kabbalah or, you know, whatever. It just doesn't matter, because you can find the truth in whatever it is you do that's there. And you'll also find some things that maybe aren't all that useful
right
there as well.
Yeah.
You know, you might find some stuff that's just not all that useful to you. So you keep the useful parts and throw away the not so useful parts and go on and, you know, learn from there.
Yeah.
So it's not a matter of right or wrong. It's a matter of what works and what doesn't, what's useful and what's not useful. So yeah. that's the idea. So it's very inclusive in that everyone can find their part in it. You know, I've had people who describe themselves as very religious say that they just love my big toe. Had one lady say, everywhere I go, I carry two things, and that's the Bible and my big toe.
Wow.
So I get some very religious people who love it because they're above the dogma.
Right.
The dogma doesn't really mean much to them. They've outgrown that in their religious development, and they're in the ideas, the concept. What does it mean? You know, what's the significance here? What's important and what's not? And they really like it. And I have just as many, or maybe probably more, people who are atheists. And they like it too, because, you know, they find in it, you know, they say, look, it's, you know, Tom must be an atheist because, you know, he doesn't have any of this religious, you know, dogma or creeds or any of that stuff. You know, he even tells you not to believe anything he says, you know, this couldn't possibly be, you know, religion. And people very religious, they can find themselves in it as well. So whether you're an atheist or whether you're a theist, you can find a logical explanation of your experience and your understanding of the world. You just have to put it in your own terms and your own metaphors once you understand it. And that's how you should go forward. It shouldn't change to somebody else's system. That just lays on another layer of belief. You just need to go on your own path.
Right.
So that's why I don't do any meditations that are led. You know, I'm really trying to break kind of do a break there with the people who are in the audience. Now, there's nothing wrong with meditations that are led. They help people get to certain places. Right. They're very effective for that. But I'm trying to teach people to get there on their own, right, without anybody holding their hand, without anybody giving them ideas or taking them along their path, just to do it. And that is what makes it hard.
Yeah.
When you have to do it yourself, it makes it harder. But once you do it yourself, now everything gets so much easier because you're not doing somebody else's process, you're doing your own. And now some things get very efficient and much easier. But it's a struggle for most people to not lead them someplace, but to just tell them, well, here's where we're going, and here's what it all means, and here's how to get there. Have a nice trip. Bye-bye. You know?
Yeah.
And they struggle with that for a while because they just they can't get it, and they have trouble with their intellect, and they struggle. But at the by the end of it, I think they're better off for not having been led, because I force them to figure it out and do it on their own, which is the only way they're really going to get it anyway, is doing it on their own. So it is difficult for some people, for many people, but I think it's rewarding for most.
Yes. I think that that's the brilliant piece, though, is you're here as a support system for all of us, not as a support system for, you know, physicists or for intuitives or for a specific. I mean, you can find a way to make it all part of each other's journey, like, because unfortunately, as much as I would like to think, I mean, I remember somebody saying, well, why not take the helicopter up? We can help you take the helicopter up to the top of the mountain. It's like, yeah, except that doesn't work. And no matter what you say, we're not actually getting a helicopter to the top of the mountain. As much as you think you're taking on our karma, and as much as you think you're telling us all the right things, we actually have to get to the top ourselves. And
absolutely,
that cannot be done by you telling us and being on a power trip. And anyway, that's why I wanted to talk about, you know, the immersive. I think if anybody is looking for something, I mean, yes, it's a beautiful experience, and maybe, you know, having them in the States is a little bit cheaper, but, you know, going to a castle or going to Tuscany, which really is next on my I'll have to let Keith know. That's the piece. And I know we're now at the end of our show, but I can't say enough. I think if you really want to, you know, take that next step and really embrace some of Tom's teachings and how to apply them, this is what you want to do, because it really allows you to have the support. It allows you to be surrounded by like-hearted and like-minded people, and you get to do that journey. And I think it's really important. So I'm glad that you're there. I'm glad that I had that opportunity, and I'm excited to have another one. So thank you, Tom.
You're quite welcome. If you're gonna talk to Keith about that Tuscany, you better talk to him soon.
I know, right?
That's gonna fill up.
I know, and it's not until like next October, 2020. Yeah,
it's
but yeah,
2020, and it's gonna fill up pretty soon.
I know. All right. Well, you have been listening to News for the Heart. We have been getting the heart of what matters with Tom Campbell. Again, highly recommend, if you can take an opportunity and want to experience it, to go there. Definitely, you know, Tom is very generous with his YouTube videos, and he gives so much knowledge out there. So take advantage of all the stuff that does come to you for free, and then support Tom with what he does. All right. Until next month. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Lori.
Have a question for Lori and want to be on the next News from the Heart show? Drop us a line via instantfeedback@bmajor.org. News from the Heart is brought to you by Intuitive Soul and is produced by Major Radio for Clear Channel's iHeartRadio and bmajor.org.